welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tag, ciao, we viva, cat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace. Now, peace how? Go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget pharmaceutical vivisection prison, kilitary industrial core poor nation, in the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy mocracy criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NRA, USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. I'm just getting back to the Bay Area after a nice event at the Museum of Animal Advocacy in Pasadena last night. Great to see old friends, activist friends, like Karina Alvarado of the Alvarado Sisters, or as we know them, the Avocado Sisters. She finally confessed to me last night. You know, we used to carpool to the circus protests. We went from Northridge to Anaheim, about an hour drive. So the first time we carpooled, I got in the car, assuming everyone would be a vegan, and they all said they were. And we talked about, how cruel dairy is and how cruel poultry and egg consumption are. And Karina confessed to me last night, they weren't vegans when I got in the car, but after the hour drive, they were thinking, they went home that night, they considered themselves vegetarians, they were going to have the quesadilla with the queso, with the cheese, and they looked at each other and said, wait a second, we're doing this for the animals, we have to go all the way, we have to go vegan. And they did that very night. So I'm really thrilled that, you know, within an hour there, an hour's discussion, we had three new vegans. And, well, this is a two-hour program we have here today. We've expanded to 2 hours for our syndication with the Genesis Communications Network. So, well, in 2 hours, well, first of all, you should go vegan within the 2 hours, and you should convince someone else to go vegan too, you know, by the second hour. So after the first hour, I hope that you'll be a vegan. By the second hour, you should have convinced someone to go vegan too, all right? Well, I drove all night, you know, to get back here. I do need to catch up on a little sleep, hopefully not within the next 2 hours, though. But if you do hear dead air, silence, you know, well, then this will also be a meditation show. I mean, we've been called everything else, right? So we're the first food show on the Genesis Communications Network. We're an animal liberation program, environmental, health, peace, children's show. If there's a lot of silence, will also be a meditation show. You know, been on commercial radio for 12 years, as heard on Air America, so we're, and on right-wing stations like in Orange County, so it's a conservative show, it's a progressive show. Last week we talked a bit about how speciesism is the last acceptable oppression in progressive media, or media, and how outraged I was that a supposed health show on KPFA, the Pacifica radio station in the Bay Area in Berkeley, had this program, Your Own Health and Fitness, with Lena Berman, I believe I recall her name. Anyway, she endorsed meat eating for health and to cure disease. That's how wacky the show is. And how she also said that animals can be raised and murdered ethically. And even giving away American Meat, a DVD, as a premium to donors to the station, explaining how to do those dirty, oppressive deeds like raising and murdering animals. And I knew we were in for trouble when the show started with a teary-eyed host, you know, all mournful, lamenting how that, oh, when humans eat, someone has to die, someone or something. And she was all sad because, well, even nuts and fruits are beautifully designed to survive, boo-hoo. It's so sad that nuts and fruits have to die, and well, since they have to die, well, we might as well kill cows, pigs, and chickens too, right? Since somebody has to die, it doesn't seem to matter. Okay, so that's really shocking. But okay, that's one freakazoid whose show should immediately be replaced for the public endangerment that it is. It's on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Should be replaced with a vegan liberation animal advocacy program, I would think. There are some glimmers of hope. I do a brief commentary Wednesday mornings at 8 in the 8 a.m. hour on KPFA now, at least until management finds out that I do, I imagine. So that's on the Morning Mix Wednesdays in the 8 a.m. hour. And I will be on Vegan World Radio this Tuesday, 6 p.m. Pacific time. That's the Pacifica station in Houston, which actually does run vegan programming. It has done so for many years. I was honored to be informed that the people who started the show were inspired by Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. So I was on the first show. I co-host regularly, and I'm looking forward to being on the program this Tuesday, 6 p.m. Pacific, with my good friend, the vegan peace mom, Cindy Sheehan, and Anuj Shah. It's KPFT Houston 90.1 FM and KPFT.org. And the show, you know, the show does really well on the station. It'll be during the pledge drive. I'll beg for some money to show that an animal liberation vegan program can bring in funds. And I would like KPFA and KPFK in Los Angeles to take a hint. You know, I mean, we can see how speciesism plays a role in, you know, perhaps the finest example of progressive journalism today, in Democracy Now!, a program I highly value. I watch it every day. But, of course, it is people-centered, anthropomorphic, right? Anthrocentric, speciesist. So the victims in a current ongoing story are what Democracy Now! Calls fast food workers who, you know, have been striking. And, you know, if you take off the speciesist filter and, you know, fast food workers become slashed food workers. And I might remind our brothers and sisters who are the, you know, the wage slaves of the corporate axes of evil, McDevil's, Murder King, Wendy's, Gills Jr., Jack the Ripper in a Box, Killing for Cash KFC, Up Chuck E. Cheese, all of them, Skin and Snout. Skin and Snout, that's what a hamburger is all about. No matter how bad the workers there think that they have it, well, it's nowhere close to their brothers and sisters, also oppressed by the same corporate masters, but those other workers wind up on the sandwiches, you know. So that's, you know, they wind up, you know, stabbed to shreds. What do they get paid? They pay with their lives. And the wage oppressed, obviously, you know, don't see, you know, the lives of the oppressed in their work, I guess. You know, we're all desperate. We need money to get by. However, higher wages in the slash food industry will never bring dignity to a bloody, cutthroat, dying business. You know, that all it does is package sorrow, you know, package sorrow, and it sells it as happiness. You know, it's a sorrow-filled, but it's called a happy meal. And it's a diet of death, disease, and destruction targeted at children, the vulnerable. I mean, this is child abuse, huh? Children are the victims. Everyone's a victim in the slashed food industry. You know, the children, the animals, the slaughterhouse workers, as well as, you know, the striking retail workers forced to flip chopped up murder victims and sell them as products. You know, so, you know, this is a progressive campaign for higher wages. I just wonder how a Democracy Now!, you know, in the age of, you know, of slavery, would have viewed higher wages, you know, for shackle, chain, and whip industry workers, huh? Yes, indeed. They need a raise. Back then, you know. Okay. How would we treat the higher wage demands of German workers in the concentration camp oven manufacturing or showerhead assembling workforce? They need raises too, right? McDonald's just responded by putting out a budget for its workers. McDonald's Visa Budget Journal, in response to all of this bad press, McDonald's put out a suggested budget for its workers. For full-time McDonald's employees, figured a net monthly income of $1,105 plus $955 for a second job, or $2,060 monthly net. For $2,060 monthly net, you have to work 62 hours a week at the Illinois minimum of $8.25 an hour. At the $7.25 national minimum wage, you would have to work 74 hours to attain that income. And a McVisa budget, 600 mortgage, 150 car, you know, it goes on and on and on. It seems to work out fairly well, because nothing is budgeted for heating, nothing is budgeted for gas or food, and the goal is that you spend $27 a day. That's it. You know, you do it, you're doing fine as a McDonald's employee, McDevil's employee. Presumably, the McDonald's CEO, Don Thompson, has to figure similar budgetary constraints on his $13.8 million compensation package. And what does he have to do? He doesn't work as hard as all the others. What does he say? He said, kill more animals, right? You know, kill more animals and sell more dead animals. Hope I have time to get into this. I did write a letter to Mike Malloy, Progressive Radio. You know, let me see if we can have, hopefully there's time to get into this here. Wrote a letter to Mike Malloy, who was on Air America when I was on Air America. I listened to his program a lot. No, apparently I don't have enough time to get into this. So, maybe later. We'll see. We have Professor Gary Francione coming up this hour. Animal rights commentary with Professor Francione. Also coming up next hour, Dr. Helen Caldicott, the most articulate voice against nuclear power, nuclear weaponry. We have a disaster going on in Japan. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio. On Facebook, you can try to get it on my little personal Bob Linden pages. There are two of those, but maybe we should start paying more attention to the Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden page, because that would allow many more than the 5,000 on each of my personal friends list. So many superficial friendships I have, right? You know, thousands and thousands. Do you know the way to eat in San Jose? It is Vegetarian House, but you don't have to go to Vegetarian House to enjoy the wonderful food. The catering business is booming now for Vegetarian House. You can check out a couple of weeks ago or so, we had Sonny Mueller on the show from Vegetarian House talking about the interest in vegan catering right now, because, you know, if you're a successful corporation with people with brains, there are probably some vegans among them, and you want to keep them happy. You don't want to just go to a typical, you know, flesh caterer, you know, who'll give your vegan employees some iceberg lettuce or something, you know. Right now, a Vegetarian House was just catering the Adobe conference gathering, corporate gathering. So if you have 1,000 people getting together, Vegetarian House will do a great job catering. Also weddings. So check out Vegetarian House. 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose, vegetarianhouse.us. And it's 100% vegan restaurant, organic, wonderful international cuisine, many raw options. Last week, we debunked the paleo diet. Today, I'd like to debunk paleo entertainment a little bit. You know, only a caveman would appreciate beating someone with a club for fun and entertainment. And every year at this time, a show out of the Dark Ages tours California, reminding us that we really haven't been out of the cave so long after all. Ringling Brothers, cruelest show on earth, coming to the Bay Area starting this Thursday in Oakland. Ringling Brothers was fined $270,000 for animal welfare violations from 2007 to 2011, the largest civil penalty against an exhibitor in the Animal Welfare Act's four-decade history. For each violation after June 2008, the USDA can fine $10,000. So there were 27 violations, at least, huh? At least 26 elephants, supposedly under the care of Ringling Brothers, have died since 1992. 4-year-old Benjamin drowned in a pond as he tried to move away from a trainer with a bullhook, a big stick with a metal hook at the end of it, classified as a deadly weapon by the Anaheim Police Department. The elephants are trained with deadly weapons. 3-year-old Kenny was forced to perform even though he was sick, dying shortly after a performance in Jacksonville. Ringling killed 8-month-old Ricardo after he fractured both legs after falling from a pedestal. Very cruel training. It's beatings, you know. The elephants are shocked with prods. The big cats are dragged by chains around their necks, hit with sticks. Chimpanzees are kicked and hit. It's constant confinement. The elephants average 26 hours in change in chains, sometimes 60 to 100 hours. Clyde, a young lion, died in a boxcar in the heat. Elephants are forced to perform while sick. And, some barrels used to feed the tigers, you know, are used to haul away their waste, too. Well, what do they care, right? Pretty ridiculous. And there is the danger to the public of the elephant finally saying, enough, I think I will trample your children right now, because enough is enough. And there is the tuberculosis threat. Ringling Brothers invades the Bay Area in Northern California starting this week after completing its annual abuse tour through Southern California. Unfortunately, the cops were intimidating advocates, again, in Anaheim, getting them not to use the megaphone. I'm sorry, I couldn't make it down there this year. I will be back next year with the megaphone to protect the Constitution and speak out for the animals in the city of animal crime, Anaheim. But Anaheim likes the animals to be beaten because it makes so much money out of the deal. Anyway, starting this Thursday, the Animal Torture Show, Oakland Arena, 7000 Coliseum Way. Protests start at 6 p.m. It's this Thursday through Monday. Then it's on to the San Jose Arena, August 21st through the 26th. The Cow Palace, August 29th through September 2nd. Yeah. Mommy, Daddy, why do you take me to a show that hurts animals like Ringling Brothers? I love animals. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. There are hundreds of archived programs there for you to hear, many of them with my next guest, who has now, I'm happy to say, joined us for a regular weekly feature, Animal Rights Commentary, with Professor Gary Francione of Rutgers University, the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school. His website is abolitionistapproach.com. Welcome again to Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden and Professor Francione. How are you today?
Thank you, Bob. I'm very, very well. Thanks for having me, and I'm excited to be part of your excellent show.
Why, thank you very much. What, have you heard my show before where you can say that it's an excellent show? Maybe you haven't heard the show yet, Gary. Maybe you should.
What are you talking about? Go Vegan Radio? Of course I've heard your show.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you said
many
it was an
times,
excellent.
Many
you
times.
Said it was an excellent show. I wanted to make sure that you've actually heard it before.
Yes. Okay. You always have, you always do a good job, and you have provocative people. I don't always agree with everything that I hear, but I enjoy listening to it. Yes, indeed, I do.
Thank you. Well, I'm not going to interrupt you. That's for sure right now.
Well, I was in several minds about what to talk about tonight because, we now have this big thing with in vitro meat, and we have father of the animal rights movement, Peter Singer, saying that, he'd like to try in vitro meat, and that's something I will address at some point. And then there's the issue about the Union of Concerned Scientists that have just issued a report that basically says that if we stop eating animal products and eat more fruits and vegetables, we can have an $11 trillion savings in terms of health care, because obviously we are a part of the baby boomer generation, Bob, and we're getting old, and there's lots of us. And when we get old and ill, and those of us who eat animal products are going to, unfortunately, get a great deal more ill, a great deal more quickly, that's going to really destroy the healthcare system in terms of bankrupting it. So the Union of Concerned Scientists is saying that we can save a lot of money if we go vegan, which, of course, you and I know, and those of us who know anything about vegan nutrition know that is the case. However, it was an interesting statement from the Union of Concerned Scientists. Nevertheless,
I've had T. Colin Campbell on this program, and he said that 90% or more of fatal degenerative disease is caused by animal protein and not much of it. So if you compute 90% of the disease, 90% of the cost in billions and trillions, heart disease, cancer, stroke, I mean, it translates into really bankrupting the country. You're right.
Absolutely. And I think things are going to get a lot worse in terms of the healthcare system. And we're going to, it's a no-brainer. We all ought to be vegans for all sorts of reasons. However, the topic I'm going to talk about tonight is a topic that I get probably the most number of emails about. It's something that is, and if ever I post anything on my abolitionist approach to animal rights Facebook site about this topic, it will immediately attract a lot of comments and a lot of shares and whatnot and views. That is the topic of vegan pets. People are always writing to me and saying, I'm a vegan, or I'm thinking of going vegan, or whatever, and I'd like to know, what do you do with dogs and cats? And let me respond to that by saying that we have had, Ann and I have had companion animals, we've had dogs, we've had rescue dogs for decades now, and our dogs are vegan. We have five of them right now. We've had as many as seven at one time. We keep it at five now because I think when you get to seven, they really know that they outnumber you. The pack mentality kicks in, and you sort of like lose control of the house. However, we have five rescued dogs right now, and they're all vegan, and they're all happy, healthy vegans. As a matter of fact, Katie, who is with me now, actually several of them are in this office with me, but Katie is one of the dogs presently.
Daisy is right next to me now, too, a little vegan chihuahua, rescued
vegan
chihuahua.
Okay, and Katie's, we're not exactly sure how old she is because she came to us from a kill shelter, but she has to be, the youngest she can be is 17. Now, she's getting a little bit, senile, and her eyesight's going, and she doesn't hear as well. But, she's still in great shape for a dog that's at least 17 years old. And our dogs, the dogs that we rescue often, not always, but often have health issues. And I can honestly say that there's no controversy at all. Dogs, like humans, are omnivores in the sense that they're capable of consuming animal protein, but they're also capable of consuming non-animal protein and being vegans. And our dogs have been vegans for decades. We cook a lot of the food for them, but there are commercial foods out there that are vegan. You have to be careful because recently there's been this issue with Wysong vegan food, which turns out not to be vegan because the vitamin D that it has in is from lanolin. But there are vegan, you know, there are other commercially prepared foods that have D2 in them. There's also, by the way, a vegan D3. Just for the as a footnote, D3 is more absorbable by the body, and D3 has never been available in vegan form before. Those of us who are vegans have been taking D2 for many years, but for about, I don't know, 2 or 3 years now, there's been a vegan D3. I think there are at least two sorts. I think one's made from algae and one's made from mushrooms. I'm not sure, but there are several companies that make D3, and I suppose that will be getting into the pet foods at some point soon. Right now, when you buy a vegan a pet food, make sure it says D2 on it. If it says D3, it may in fact not be a vegan source of D3. But in any event, there's no problem with dogs being vegan. The problem comes with cats. Now, we don't have any companion animals who are felines, but we have plenty of friends who do, and they have cats who are vegan. Now, you have to give cats a taurine supplement. There is a vegan taurine supplement that is available. And what a lot of people don't realize is that even the commercial cat foods, that are made from meat and fish or whatever, they have taurine supplements in them, which is they're not vegan taurine supplements, but they have taurine supplements because the meat is so processed that it doesn't have enough taurine. So whether you're feeding your cat vegan or not vegan, your cat is eating or consuming a taurine supplement. The only question is whether it's vegan or not. So we have a number of friends who have vegan cats. We have friends who are vets who say it's perfectly safe to have a vegan cat. You should consult with your veterinarian to make sure that, as I understand it, again, I'm not a veterinarian. You need to talk to your veterinarian. But I understand with male cats, there can be some crystallizing in the urethra. There's as a sort of a negative reaction to a vegan diet. But having said that, as I say, a lot of people have vegan cats, males and females, that are healthy, and it's something that can be done, and you can get vegan taurine. But the question, you know, always comes: well, what happens if you can't get a cat to go vegan, either because the cat simply is going to starve? The cat will not eat vegan food. It's just, you know, you try it and the cat simply won't eat and the cat's going to starve to death. Or if you've got a cat that for some reason can't accommodate to a vegan diet. And I've seen some stuff on the internet. Of course, I've seen lots of stuff on the internet. There's lots of crazy stuff on the internet. But there are animal advocates who actually advocate that we ought to either throw the cat, you know, not adopt them, or kill them. You know, they use the word euthanize. Euthanizing a healthy animal is not euthanizing; it's killing. You know, euthanasia is when death's in the interest of the party being killed. When you're a healthy cat or a healthy anything, death is not in your interest. So you can't really say euthanizing a cat. You kill the cat because the cat is at least incapable of being a vegan for one reason or another. But I would say that I think that's wrong. Do I think it's okay to feed cats non-vegan foods? And the answer is no, of course I don't think it's okay to do it. But I also think this is an excellent example of the messes that domesticated animals make. We should not have domesticated animals. We should not be bringing, we certainly shouldn't be bringing more into existence. But the problem is we have brought or facilitated bringing into existence zillions and zillions billions of dogs and cats. Now, frankly, you know, I mean, look, there's nobody on the planet Earth that loves dogs as much as I do, except for perhaps for Anna. We just love the dogs.
Maybe me too.
Okay, all right, okay, fine, all right, we'll include you there. But, you know, look, if there were two dogs left on the planet and it were up to us as to whether or not we had them breed so that we could continue to have dogs as pets, the answer is not on your life. I mean, you know, I think domestication is a terrible thing. You know, the number of animals, the number of dogs and cats and other domesticated animals that have good homes for all of their lives, really very small. Most of the animals, you know, most dogs, most cats, most other domesticated animals that we regard as companions, as companions for humans, have horrible lives. You know, dogs, most dogs in this country they have a home for a couple of years before they're dumped, taken to a vet to be killed, taken to a kill shelter, whatever. I mean, or given to another home. I mean, it's terrible. And then if you talk about, you know, on a worldwide basis, I mean, these poor animals have horrible lives. And you know what? Even if, you know, look, I love our dogs. I know you love your dog. But the reality is they have a somewhat, even the ones that are loved by people like us, have a really sort of sad life in that they're totally dependent on us for everything. I mean, they're vulnerable in a way that is tragic. And, you know, they're dependent on us for everything. When they eat, when they drink, when they go outside, etc. Yes, if you treat the animal well, you have a good relationship, the animal gets something out of it. But still, I think domestication, even when it goes well, has some serious moral problems. But one, you know, and so domestication, you know, creates messes, creates moral messes. We've facilitated all these cats who are roaming around. We've got an obligation to them. They're here because of us. They're here because of our selfishness. They're here because of our short-sightedness, our moral mistakes. We can't, you know, the idea that animal advocates say, yeah, well, go ahead and you know, kill them or throw them outside where they're gonna kill birds and other little animals and stuff. And so...
Gary, we have to take a break. Hold the thought. We'll pick up for a few more minutes after the break on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com with Professor Gary Francione. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, and Jello is made from gelatin, which is traditionally made from the skin and bones of cows, pigs, horses. Why would you be feeding that to your children when you have the vegan alternative? Cool Caps. Stay cool. Your kids can still have their fun. The jiggly snack made from seaweed. Check out the website. It's cool-cups.net/gelatin. cool-cups.net/gelatin. Three delicious flavors, orange, peach mango, and black cherry. And they're really delicious. They're 100% GMO-free, gluten-free, vegan, and naturally low in calories. The kids will love them. It's cool-cups.net/gelatin. We're talking to Professor Gary Francione. His weekly feature on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden is Animal Rights Commentary with Professor Gary Francione. And Gary, before the break, you were talking about vegan dogs and cats, and we're hitting upon the issue that, well, if cats can't be vegan, what do you do?
Well, difficult question. The bottom line is you can't kill them and you can't throw them out. They're here because of our error. They're here because of our moral mistakes. We have an obligation. What do we do? How do we make it work? Well, let me say this. As I say, I think you really got to make an effort to get your cat to be vegan, and you need to get the information that you need. But you can, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of people I know have vegan cats, and there is now a vegan taurine supplement. However, this is the distinction I draw. I draw a distinction between justification and excuse. Let's imagine somebody is trying to kill me. I'm minding my own business and someone's trying to kill me and I kill that person in self-defense. That's a justifiable homicide. That is, I haven't done anything morally wrong if I've defended myself. But imagine a different situation where you put a gun to my child's head and say, if you don't go in and rob that store, I'm going to kill your child. And I go in and I rob the store. I've done something wrong. But we oftentimes excuse my behavior because we understand why I did it. I did something morally wrong. I did something I shouldn't have done. I robbed the store. The store owner didn't do anything to harm me. And I'm doing it because if I don't rob the store, you're going to shoot my child. So I draw a distinction between justification and excuse. And I say, feeding your cat animal products is never morally justifiable. It's always wrong. But at some point in time, we have to take the karmic hit, as it were. It's our responsibility that they're here, and I think it's absolutely outrageous that when I hear animal advocates saying that we should kill the cats or we should throw them out, I think that that's absolutely wrong. I would like to say this. I mean, if you buy your cat an inexpensive cat food, commercial cat food, given what goes into commercial cat foods, you are not causing additional animals to be killed. We're talking about slaughterhouse floor sweepings. Now, again, I think that's wrong. I think it's morally wrong to ever feed animals to anybody. but I think that, you know, and it does obviously provide some economic support to the industry. So I do think it's morally problematic in all sorts of ways. But what else are we going to do? And now, I want to say something else, and then I will. I know I went over my limit, Bob, and I apologize.
No problem.
But I want to say this. I really feel strongly people who have cats have an obligation not to let them roam around outside unsupervised. Because it's one thing to say, okay, fine, my cat's going to die if I don't give my cat some commercial cat food. It's another thing to let the cat go wandering around outside and killing birds and rabbits and other little small animals and stuff like that. I mean, I think you ought to supervise your cat when your cat's outside. It's also not a good idea to let cats roam because they get into fights with other cats. They can contract all sorts of illnesses, including fatal illnesses. They can get run over by cars, etc. But so I do think that we have a moral obligation, not only to our cats, but to the animals that they could injure. But we have an obligation. I would not allow, if I had a companion animal who was a cat, I wouldn't allow the cat to roam around. However, I do believe that we really, I mean, I'm shocked when I hear animal people say we should kill cats or we should just throw them out and not feed them. They're our problem. We've got to deal with it. Is it morally right to feed them animal foods? No. Is it morally excusable if we have made every single effort to try to get the cat to be vegan? Then I would say it's morally understandable and it mitigates the culpability to some degree. And
okay,
that's
Gary,
my commentary
we're,
for this week.
Thank you so much. We're
thank
out
you,
of
Bob.
Time. Thank you, Gary. And we remember Bramble, who lived to be 27 years old, which is 189 in dog years, a vegan dog fed rice and beans and greens in the UK. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Lind. And greetings once again. It is the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. We are attempting to connect with Dr. Helen Caldicott in Australia. I believe her assistant said that she will return in just a few minutes. So maybe now I have that time to read that letter regarding speciesism that I wrote to Mike Malloy, radio talk show host, who was on Air America the same time I was. So when it gets down to it, we oppose racism, right? We, of course, all good people oppose racism and sexism, homophobiaism, classism, ageism. But when it comes to speciesism, maybe it's okay to keep eating others. Or wear them, or experiment upon them, or, you know, beat them so they'll do stupid tricks in the circus. We seem to still have that prejudice related to other species. So, and that's often reflected in our language.
And it's often reflected in Mike Malloy's language. So I wrote him a letter. I really enjoy his show, too. I mean, I listen to it all the time. But regarding speciesist language, I said, "Hi, Mike. Your program, next to mine, is my favorite talk show in radio. In fact, I listen to you more than I listen to me, even though I find your language offensive and awash in speciesism. Within about an hour tonight, your range of insults for irrational human behavior included pigs, swine, cockroaches, and turtles. What did these poor, innocent, harmless animals do to deserve such degradation? It would be progressive of you to examine speciesism and the language of it as you would do for racism, sexism, homophobia, ageism, classism. The language of speciesism is used to dehumanize other people as just animals. So why not torture them, rape them, kill them, wage war against them, drone them, napalm them, nuke them? To my ears, when you call right-wingers pigs, swine, cockroaches, rats, snakes, dogs, monkeys, turtles, etc., you're actually elevating those whom you are attempting to criticize, as other animals never engage in the sadistic, aberrant, hateful, torturous, destructive, homicidal, suicidal, genocidal behavior regularly associated with your species. You are the leading voice in progressive radio, and anachronistic language does not befit you. Please stick to traditional four-letter words, body parts, body excretions and secretions, and whatever filth you deem appropriate for your inventory of insults. But please leave the poor animals alone. Their lives are miserable enough without reinforcement from those who should know better, those who are supposed to champion the cause of the oppressed. Sincerely, Bob Linden, Go Vegan Radio." So that was my letter to Mike Malloy. I spoke to you a little while ago about Cool Cups. You can get them at Viva La Vegan grocery store. Cool Cups would be one of 6,000 items available at Viva La Vegan grocery in Rancho Cucamonga. Available to you whether you're in Southern California or anywhere, because if you just click shop online, you can have any of those products sent to you, including organic and veganic produce and products. Veganic meaning no animal, agricultural, anything in the growing process. So you can check out the website. It's VivaLaVeganGrocery.com. VivaLaVeganGrocery.com. And just a little special heads up, Viva La Vegan will be opening kind of an express location in Santa Monica within the next couple of weeks. I'll tell you where next week on this program. I'm looking at an article now from the Washington Post. It says the Georgia Aquarium denied permit to import 18 beluga whales from Russia to the United States. The Georgia Aquarium officials say the National Marine Fisheries Service has denied its application to import beluga whales from Russia. Maybe that's good news, but knowing humans, I'm sure that doesn't necessarily mean freedom for the whales, who have been imprisoned now for quite a while. In the article here, it says, in a statement Tuesday, Georgia Aquarium spokeswoman Megan Gibbons said aquarium officials were deeply disappointed in the decision. You know, when slaveholders can't get more slaves, it's very disappointing, right? The aquarium applied in June 2012 to import 18 whales as part of an initiative aimed at improving the genetic diversity of belugas living in American captivity. Well, you know something? none of them should be living in American captivity. Don't we have enough prisoners in this country already? Really? Georgia aquarium zoologists have said most belugas living in America are past their prime calf-bearing age, and importing new ones could improve breeding efforts. Let's churn out more prisoners, right, into a life of captivity, into a life in a bathtub. Let's make a profit off of that, huh? So the Georgia Aquarium, the world's largest, draws 2.2 million guests every year, and that's good news for them, but you know, bad news that they're still captive in Russia. So anyway, be my friend on Facebook. Look for Bob Linden and Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. I want you to mark your calendar celebrate my birthday this year with me. Well, September 28th and 29th, which is my birthday. It will also be the World Veg Festival in San Francisco, the annual event which I emcee at Golden Gate Park every year. Have a fantastic time. We usually have, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people who come out to it. So we hope to see you there. For information, you can go to sfvs.org, sfvs.org, as in San Francisco Vegetarian Society, which hosts vegan drinks the last Monday of every month at Martuni's in San Francisco. World Veg Festival coming up this year, September 28th and 29th at Golden Gate Park. Thousands of people there. Great food to sample. Check out the website for it. Always just fantastic guests. And one of my favorite weekends of the year. So I hope to see you there. And are you considering acupuncture for your dog? Acupuncture has been used in traditional Chinese medicine for animals for a long time, correcting energy imbalances, enhancing circulation, stimulating the nervous system. It's been used for thousands of years in China. Veterinary acupuncture has. It's been used for musculoskeletal problems, arthritis, disc disease, nerve injury, respiratory problems, skin issues, gastrointestinal problems, and others. And so if acupuncture for your dog interests you, contact the Oceana Pet Hospital, which is the only veterinary hospital AAHA accredited in Pacifica. It's open 7 days a week. It's 7-Eleven Oceana Boulevard in Pacifica. You call 650-355-6600. 650-355-6600. It's owner and primary veterinarian, Dr. Nia, DVM, PhD, completed the acupuncture course of the International Veterinary Acupuncture Society. For more information, visit oceanapet.com. That's oceanapet.com. I'd like to thank Kim Sheridan for support of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Kim Sheridan, the author of the heartwarming book Animals and the Afterlife. You can check that out at animalsandtheafterlife.com. Animalsandtheafterlife.com. So we hope that in a few minutes we will be hearing from Dr. Helen Caldicott. She's been a guest on this program many times in the past, and some people have said that they were her most enjoyable discussions of nuclear power and nuclear weaponry, as this past week once again was commemorated the bombings in Japan. We don't want any other countries. We're very concerned about other countries having any nukes, except we're the only ones who seem to use them regularly, right? Even depleted uranium in Iraq. So I don't know what to tell you there.
and all the ag gag that everybody's been talking about, and concerned about suppressing our rights to show what goes on with animals and farms and all. You know, all of this has been pushed by ALEC. ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, made up of industry lobbyists and state legislators. And if you go to the website, you see it's just really, you can see who these people are and what they're doing. And all of the major corporations, the drug companies, the Achtung und Tungs of the world are part of ALEC, you know, trying to just keep the information down. So it's very disturbing, ALEC. Having to do, there's a model bill on the website, the Animal and Ecological Terrorism Act, for states to use and copy. It's really quite absurd the way our constitutional rights and the attacks on journalism are occurring. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. We will continue. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. We have probably about 400 archives from our broadcast over the past 12 years at goveganradio.com, and you will notice there is a donate button there, and there are expenses associated with producing airtime, producing a show, and being on air. So if you can help us out, that would really be great. So this is live radio. We've expanded to a two-hour show, and you know, still trying to connect with Dr. Caldicott in Australia, and it being live radio, over the course of the last couple of weeks, we also had some trouble connecting with Dr. Lester Friedlander, the former USDA inspector. Now, whistleblower Lester Friedlander, DVM. And we have connected with Lester today. So I think maybe we can catch up on some of the issues that we expected to cover over the past couple of weeks. And if we do hear from Dr. Caldicott, we'll go to her also, and we'll continue our live party here. So how are you doing, Lester? What's going on with you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you for having me again.
Okay, sure. We had a number of issues that we were going to cover over the past few weeks. Somehow we didn't connect because of it's live radio. So bring us up to speed on where you are. There were horse slaughterhouses that were scheduled to open. You're trying to get a position on an advisory committee with the Department of Interior, Secretary of Interior. You were upset with Wayne Pacelli of the Humane Society of the United States on the Jane Velez Mitchell program. So jump in here and catch us up with what we thought we were going to talk about the last couple of weeks.
Okay, first of all, let me just backtrack a little bit. The latest thing happened was last Friday. USDA Forestry Service had a roundup with a Native American tribe with some wild horses. And what happened was that some horse advocate organizations found out about it, and they contacted USDA about it, and it was against the regulations because in order to do a roundup for the wild horses and burros, they had to announce it, publicly announce it, and they never did that. So it looks like they were pulling a fast one over the American people by having this roundup with helicopters to round up these horses. So what happened was then the Forestry Service of USDA postponed it last Friday until they can announce the date that they're going to have the roundup so the public can actually witness the roundup to make sure that the horses are treated humanely in this helicopter roundup. And the other problem is
that doesn't sound like it's possible to be humane.
Excuse me?
Oh, I'm saying it's how can it be humane? The word humane is stretched so thin sometimes because you know how can a helicopter roundup be humane? I mean, right? Isn't that like
from my veterinary perspective, it is inhumane because the helicopters have been noticed before and been documented that they've got so close to the horses that the skids actually knocked the horses down. Number one, number two, the helicopters chase these horses through all different kinds of terrain. Okay, whether it be ditches, whether it be barbed wire fences, wooden fences, push the horses right through them. They're stumbling on their necks and getting hurt. And also depends on the environment. A lot of dust is given out from the blades of the helicopter, and the horses are actually breathing this dust that could probably cause them some kind of upper respiratory infections or pneumonias, aspiration pneumonias. So really it isn't a good idea to use helicopters. And like I said, it might go for 10, 15 miles if they're chasing these wild horses and burros.
And they're all terrified, of course. You know, I mean, they're terrified and they're endangered, and there are your tax dollars at work. But why have a roundup? What's the purpose of a roundup? Why?
Well, the purpose of this roundup, they said, was that the Native American tribe, and I forgot what the name of the tribe was, that they wanted the horses rounded up on their reservation, and they wanted them rounded up and put in the corral where they go to auction and then go to slaughter either in Canada or Mexico for human consumption.
Wow.
Okay. And they're not really the protected horses that are public lands. These horses were actually on, you know, Native American land on their reservation. And they asked the Forestry Service to help them round them up. The problem is, right adjacent to it is public land where there is wild horses and burros who are protected. And a lot of the
Dr. Friedlander, we have to take a break, but we have more time to spend with you coming up. We're talking to Dr. Lester Friedlander. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. We are listener-supported. You are a listener. Why not support us with a donation at the website? Also, if you have vegan and cruelty-free products and services which you would like to advertise, you can become a sponsor and just email me. It's bob at goveganradio.com. Well, we heard from Dr. Helen Caldicott. The most challenging part of scheduling guests on this program is time zones. You'd be amazed how many people, you know, on the East Coast of the U.S. Think they're 3 hours behind California instead of 3 hours ahead, or, you know, it's always, you know, a kind of a juggling act when it comes to brilliant people discussing, you know, time zones. And, well, our excuse is Helen Caldicott is in Australia, and we certainly couldn't get the time zones right in another country or continent. So she thought we were going to talk in 2 hours from now. By then, I hope to be napping. But she said she will be available next week. So we will try to make arrangements and, you know, synchronize our watches and talk to her then. Right now, we're fortunate to be talking to Lester Friedlander, doctor of veterinary medicine, who for over 10 years was an inspector with the USDA. He's now a whistleblower. I don't know. Are you running from Obama, Lester? I mean, whistleblowers have to stay on the run, don't they?
Well, that's what it seems like. Actually, since you brought that up, there's a big case going on right now with a USDA food inspector with 28 years of service that was working at a Tyson plant at a hog kill. And what happened was he kept on reporting to his immediate supervisor, a veterinarian, that the hogs were still alive when they were starting the slaughtering process on the hog. And unfortunately, what happened to this food inspector became a federal whistleblower was that USDA FSIS said that he was a troublemaker, and in the best interest of USDA and the Tyson plant, they actually detailed him now 100 miles away from his home every day to another plant.
So they gave him a promotion, and he has to travel a fantastic distance because that's his punishment for speaking the truth.
We're not sung properly.
Unbelievable! Wow. So, all right. Well, let's keep blowing our whistle here. Maybe have you spoken to him at all or been in touch with the person?
No, I haven't spoken to him. But it's on that website on the internet, change.org petition. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And actually, the person that runs that petition actually contacted me because I made a statement in there about that inspector that he was only doing his job, and the same scenario happened to me. But I was the veterinarian in charge of this plant when they kept on violating the Maine Slaughter Act. And every day, at the end of the day, the plant manager would come to me and say, you know, Dr. Freelander, you shut us down today for 10 minutes, okay, because you said the cows weren't stunned properly, and at $7,000 a minute, it cost us $70,000. And I would say to him, well, what's your point? If you did the job right, maybe slow the line down, we wouldn't have to go through this. And like I said, after repeated violations, and I'm writing them up, then USDA reassigned me. They took me out of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So I can sympathize with this food inspector. He's only doing his job. But, you know, FSIS, USDA, doesn't back, you know, the veterinarians or food inspectors out in the field because of the economics, and the companies start complaining that they're losing money.
Mm-hmm. So consumers beware, you know, and you were a slaughterhouse inspector. That would be like a very, wouldn't that be a very repulsive scene? I mean, what do you, I mean, gosh, that's got to be really.
Well, it's very repulsive, but like I said, you know, as a veterinarian, I was in charge of the whole plant. I was in charge of all the live animals coming in. I was in charge of all the product leaving that plant. And I was also in charge of the day shift plus the night shift. So if anything ever happened or there's a product recall and it came back to my plant, I would be the first one to get a letter from USDA explaining what went wrong. You know, and I'm not there 24 hours. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's the way that they shuffle the paperwork, you know? To get somebody else, you know, the answer for it.
So it's kind of they would prefer that you really don't look and don't find. And, you know, I'm sure this is very reassuring to the public knowing that, you know, people trying to rationalize that any animal products are, you know, humane or regulations are being followed. Well, look what happens if they're not followed and somebody speaks up. You know, it's like Bradley Manning all over again. That's the situation here. You know, don't look, don't tell, don't. You know, don't find, you know, it's like, don't find mad cow disease, you know, don't, you know, no. So.
Right? No, so I sympathize with this inspector's family. Like I said, now, every morning he's got to travel 100 miles to his plant. Okay.
I wonder if he'd be interested in coming on. I wonder if he'd be interested in coming on the program with you, although I don't think his. Then he'd probably be moved another 100 miles away or something.
Well, I don't think he'd come on the program knowing that if USDA FSIS found out about it, they'll say he's a troublemaker and again detail him maybe to China. Who knows? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's the situation with me, you know, when they asked me to leave, you know, they said, you know, if you didn't want to quit then. We'll just detail you to, like, Montana, you know, away from your family, you know? And and the story with that is that if you don't accept it, then they'll ask and tell you they'll detail you somewhere else, like to Oregon. You know, after three times, then they have the right to say, I'm sorry, you know, if you didn't accept the assignment, okay, you have to resign. If you go in front of a federal judge, the judge will say the same thing. Dr. Freelander, they gave you three chances, Okay, three locations. You didn't take them. I can't do anything for you. And that's the way typically how the government operates.
That's the way the game is played.
You know, and whistleblowing is a federal law. But there's no congressman or senator that's going to back you up. You're on your own.
Unbelievable. Yeah,
that's unfortunate.
So that puts us all on our own in that case, you know. Did you want to talk about, there were some situations with horses rounded up recently, and, you know, I and Wayne Pacelli went on, of the Humane Society of the United States, went on the James Willis Mitchell program upset you, but also, you know, and people are talking about, sterilization is an answer, or birth control is an answer, but can we just first understand why horses are being rounded up anyway? Aren't they free-living animals who already have a home, and why are they being rounded up, any horses being rounded up?
Well, according to the Bureau of Land Management, the Forestry Service, okay, it's to the benefit of the animals, to the horses, that they round them up and put them in these holding pens for adoption. In the case that happened last Friday, it was the Native American tribe that asked the Forest Service to help them round up the horses on the reservation, with helicopters. But like I said, according to the regulations, it has to be announced any time that they have a roundup. And it wasn't announced. So it looks like they were just doing it on the fly, and some horse organizations found out about it and contacted the USDA and made a public stink about it. So that's when they postponed it. But the other thing is also, some of the horse advocates were saying some of those horses, protected horses, actually from public land that were mixed in with that roundup.
Roundup is kind of a dirty word for more reasons than one at this point, Monsanto friends. But the horses that recently were in a heat wave, and they were all over there. The horses are rounded up really so that cows can graze for meat. Isn't that really the reason that?
Well, that actually what happened is that they took the wild horses and burros off their protected public land, okay, because of the pressure from congressmen and senators that have connections to the cattle industry, and the cattlemen graze their cattle on the public lands, and they're only paying about $1 a head to graze it on there. With the horses and burros also on the public land, they're saying that their cattle does not have enough forage to eat, because the horses and burros are on there, so they're taking the horses and burros off the public lands and put them in a holding pen. And then it says also that only 10% of that livestock that's found on public lands actually is eating domestically. 90% of that is actually exported.
So basically the horses are suffering so that people can profit. The cowboys can profit by grazing cows, and then they send the meat overseas, and they get a bargain on the land. So really what this says to me is that, if you eat meat, if you eat flesh, you must really hate horses, you know? I mean, do you really hate horses that much to eat cows? I mean, that's pretty insane. So bring us up to date on any of those situations. I know you were upset with what happened on Jane Velez Mitchell. I don't know what the situation is with the horses who were out there in the drought. So bring us up to date and your bid for the advisory to the Secretary of the Interior.
Okay. Well, like I said, when Wayne Pacelli, who's the CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, was interviewed by Jane Velez Mitchell from CNN, and they were talking about the abundance of wild horses and burros. And you got to remember, also HSUS also has the birth control PCP that they're using, and the Bureau of Land Management is using also to control the birth of these mares. But Wayne Pacelli said that actually he felt that because there's so many horses and burros out there, the best thing to do is probably sterilize them.
Well, I'm sorry, Dr. Friedlander, once we get started, the music comes on, we have to take a break, but we'll have a few more minutes left after this break. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. We have just a few minutes left. We're talking to Dr. Lester Friedlander. Before the break, he was explaining that he was upset with CEO of the Humane Society of the United States, an organization that I have no respect for that organization. He was on the Jane Velez Mitchell show, and horses were suffering in the heat, and he was asked what to do, and it was like, Join the Humane Society, become a member. Of course, HSUS didn't take any of its $200 million in the bank and build shade structures for the horses or anything, but he also said that the horses should be sterilized. And Dr. Friedlander informed us that HSUS has the patent on PZP, a birth control drug made from pig's eggs, and it's being used to experiment on those wild horses now. Take it, Dr. Friedlander.
Yes, and like I said, you know, when you made that statement that the horses should be sterilized, I mean, that's the end product, okay? If we sterilize these horses, and we're not going to have any more wild horses and burros then to appreciate. I mean, sterilization is the end product. I mean, it's irreversible if you sterilize. So I just found it not in the best interest, you know, for an organization such as HSUS to make that statement.
Yeah, but you have to wonder now the way these horses, you have to wonder what these horses face these days. Gosh, who wants to be born into the world of helicopter roundups? It's very upsetting what's happening, you know, and they're not, you know, saying that they should live free, and they're not protecting that. Lester?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and we're not so sure PZP is, you know, I mean, it's an experiment. It's basically HSUS is experimenting on animals with animal products right now.
Well, basically, that's what it is, you know. When they're using that, for birth control for the mares, and there's a couple of things also, negative things about it. Because it also changes the pattern also in her cycle, okay? And some of the foals are born in the off-season, per se, which makes it also difficult for them to be raised.
So the babies are born in the off-season. They may not find food. It's not their natural cycle, you're saying?
Yeah, and also the conditions also, and the seasons that they're born in, it's not controlled when you give, like, the birth control. And the birth control is transmitted to a dart, okay? And it's not 100% effective, per se, just because they hit the horse with the mare with the dart, the mare can actually still fold. So it's a hit and miss sort of thing.
And it can upset social patterns of herds then, too?
Definitely can, yes.
Yeah. We have, let's see, we probably have another minute and a half. Are you still attempting to become an advisor to the Secretary of the Interior? Tell us about that and the websites and all.
Yeah, that's going to be, like I said, that nomination has to be in by this Friday. I'm finishing up my resume. I'm going to submit it either tomorrow or no later than Tuesday. People that want to nominate me, it's on the advisory board for the wild horses and burros, or the Bureau of Land Management under the Department of Interior, and the website that you can go to actually or contact is the National Wild Horse and Burro Program, Department of Interior, Bureau of Land Management website. And also you can contact this lady, Sharon Kipping, K-I-P-P-I-N-G, in Washington, D.C. She's going to be accepting the application for the nomination.
And what will you do for the horses then if you're nominated and accepted?
Well, if I get nominated and accepted on this advisory board, I definitely will make recommendations to the Secretary of Interior that, number one, there has to be shade and shelter for all the wild horses and burros that are under the Bureau of Land Management.
That would be great. I know they were sprinkling them when they were in the drought. You said they need the water to drink. Stop spraying them. Dr. Friedlander, we're just about out of time. Look forward to having you on the program again. Thanks so much for being with us on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com.